Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you're listening to the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Today, our very special guest is Mary Ann Fisher. Mary Ann Fisher is an empath and intuitive. Mary Ann's journey of awakening began in early childhood. In 1996, she became aware of and began further developing the ability to energetically facilitate her body's self-healing capacities, which set her on a path of seeking more hidden knowledge about ourselves and our world. In 1998, she awakened to the ability to access and to synthesize diverse higher-order knowledge and devise practical, effective strategies and techniques for integrating and applying it in everyday life, and began sharing her insights and tools with others. Her client work and a selection of articles, essays, and video commentaries on her website, the Restoration Activation Project, are the culmination of 22 years of in-depth research, study, and self-study, self-mastery work, and investigation into spirituality, religious dogmas, esoteric teachings, psychology, science, history, human origins, and the true nature of consciousness and reality. Mary Ann lives in Houston, Texas, and offers self-mastery and awakening process support to individuals at any point on their journey of awakening. The ability to attune to the uniqueness of each person and his or her journey, then deliver individual assistance that gets results, are the hallmarks of her work. Her website is the Restoration Activation Project, and she has a dedicated YouTube channel, and we'll have all of Mary Ann Fisher's contact information, website information on our YouTube channel and on our website. So without any further ado, Mary Ann Fisher, welcome to the Cosmic Switchboard Show.
Hi, James. Thanks so much for having me.
The pleasure is all ours, Mary Ann. Could you tell us a bit about yourself and how you got into this work?
Well, it's kind of a long and winding road. I'll try to keep it confined a bit, but basically I came into this world knowing that things were really off balance. And I began having I have early memory experiences of various types of entity interferences in conjunction with living in a very, I would say, unstable family environment. And years later, of course, I didn't know this as a little child, but came to understand that both my parents were narcissists, one being narcissist and borderline personality disorder, as well as both of them being OCD. So you can imagine all the fun and games that went on in my house. And also learned in later years that one of my siblings is a psychopath, and not a sociopath, but a psychopath. And still have challenges with that. Both my parents have since passed. But anyway, just moving through life, most of the time, beginning with childhood, feeling like a deer caught in the headlights most of the time. All of this was just so foreign to me. For most of my life, I always felt like I said, the deer thing. I was totally caught off guard by most of what was unfolding around me, as well as stuff that would happen directly to me. A little bit of additional information that will give you some insights into some of my early conditioning was that through about third grade, I was raised as a Catholic, and all that implies. So one of my early, the first personal experience in terms of entity interference that I recall was when I was only about three or four. We were a middle-class family, struggling at best, five children. And so we lived in a two-bedroom house at that time. So all of the children shared a room. My youngest sibling had a crib, but there were two beds in the room, and two of the remaining four slept in one bed and two slept in another. And I was always a very light sleeper anyway. And one night I heard a disturbing and frightening deep growling. And I sat straight up in bed. And on the opposite side of the room, which wasn't very big, I saw this sort of black on black amorphous, kind of loosely shaped like a man, but, and it was emanating this growling sound. And like I said, it was this black on black, opaque, sort of a mist, I would call it. And I was just terrified and mesmerized at the same time. I had never, or didn't have any memories, prior memories of anything like this. And I tried to speak out. I was trying to call to my parents who were in a room down the hallway, and my voice just couldn't get loud enough. And so I tried to, I was shaking my one of my older brothers who was in the bed beside me, trying to wake him up. And no matter how hard I shook him, he wouldn't wake up. And I couldn't understand that. But long story short, I knew that the only way I was going to get to my parents was to have to walk right past this thing. And so I thought about that for a minute or two, and it's like, well, I don't have any choice. So here I go. And I just got out of bed and ran and got my mom up. And of course, being the person that she was, and I was very young, and so I kind of understand her perspective, but she basically laughed at me, told me that it was my father snoring, which I'd heard countless nights before. It was not my father snoring, and just kind of shuffled me back off to bed, gave me a drink of water, and she was literally laughing at me. So what I take away from that, and I always like to do that too, this is something I've made a point of all my life, is that whatever happens to me, I now know that it's an opportunity for me to learn something that will help me keep moving forward on my own journey. And so what I took away from that, and it took a number of years to figure this out, was what made that thing go away was me getting up and walking right past it. It took some moxie for a little kid to do that. And of course, like I said, I didn't realize that until later years, but that was the trick, facing it head on. So anyway, kind of skipping ahead a little bit, in terms of childhood, school events, you know, I was just your quiet little, very studious little child, and, you know, made straight A's, kept to myself, because after that early incident, there were a couple of other things, a time or two where I had some really powerful deja vus that I think were past life things trying to come through. But again, I was mocked and ridiculed and, in fact, punished one time for even talking about it. So I was being conditioned, you know, to be quiet, don't say anything, particularly not about that kind of thing, and just keep your nose to the grindstone, do what you're told. All in all, a very destabilizing, spirit-suppressing kind of atmosphere, to say the least. But anyway, moving ahead, at school events, I would be, you know, I just wanted to basically be invisible, as it were, because it seemed to me that every time I got attention, it was the kind of attention that you really don't want, you know, like getting in trouble for something that you really didn't even realize was something that you could get in trouble for. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I'm just telling the truth. I'm just telling you what happened. But it's like, oh, no, don't do that. So, but extreme things like teachers singling me out just kind of out of the blue for the weirdest things and humiliating me in front of the classroom, which I, again, in later years figured out they were, at least for the moment, they were portals for other beings. And, of course, you know, growing up, you don't know any of this stuff. At least not when I was growing up. I mean, people today might have a little more access to information, but I would say most blow it off if they do actually come across information that would suggest such a thing. But so that was kind of, you know, the childhood thing. And I'll jump ahead to, you know, and a series of other events, some really awful personal relationships. And I'm not saying that all of this, of course, is pure entity interference, because by then I'm carrying all of these fear-based emotions, you know, all the shame and guilt programming, all that stuff. So I know I was, you know, emanating a lot of lower vibrational energy. So I would attract certain types of people. And of course they would present themselves in a different way because, you know, I'm no dummy, but then after I'm in the relationship, these people would just, many of them, their eyes would literally just kind of go black. It was, you know, I mean, really. So just a lot of struggles that way, but now I'll jump ahead to, about 1995, and I had been, I guess, coming out of some personal struggles, financial issues, relationship issues, and things were kind of on an even plane and had been for a few months. And it was at that point that I decided that I wanted to take charge. I was tired of feeling like I was living somebody else's life, or that everybody but me knew something that I didn't know. So that's really, and I was always a very curious person, always did not like school for many reasons, but always loved learning. And I just took it to another degree and turned it on myself. And it's like, I want to know more about me, how I fit into things, what life is really all about, you know, what do some people know that I don't know? What's really going on? And it began with me. And the first thing I did, I had been feeling, because I'd been through so much in the past, I know that I had struggled with what I now know were some bouts of depression, and just basically had worked through them myself. But I wanted to do it more consciously now. And so I just opted to go see a psychotherapist. And after about 2 months of that, it's like, okay, what I learned from that was that this is up to me. This is my work. You know, and I'm not saying that psychiatry and psychotherapy have no benefit. There are people who need these. People that are in different places in their life, and they can be of huge benefit. But for me personally, what I took away is somebody sitting in a chair, listening to what I have to say without offering any input or feedback. You know, it's like I could talk to somebody else. You know, do I really need to do this? But so it was a great experience for me to have, because it really caused me to dig in even further and to realize that I'm responsible for me and my life. And I wanted to take charge. So it was good in that sense. And so I just started diving into anything that struck me, from books on physics. I mean, I started, I think the first book that I read was, some of your listeners might remember this one, Gary Zukav's Not Seat of the Soul, but Dancing Wu Li Masters, where he's beginning to make some correlations between various aspects and occurrences of physics in regard to consciousness. And so I found that fascinating. And from there, I read, you know, like Brian Greene's string theory, read some Hawking stuff. And it all just sort of unfolded. I don't have a background in science. I just decided that I was going to understand, and things just sort of flowed. And so that helped. And then I got more into the, I'll call it spiritual side of it, and investigating every type of religion and the backgrounds of that, you know, everything from the Torah and the Quran and Hinduism and Judaism, the Kabbalah, and you know, the Christian religions as well, the variations of that. I mean, I would visit churches and temples and any place that I could be, that I was allowed to visit and get that experience, because I was seeking the answer to, you know, if there is a God, what is God? And so I went on that journey, and what I determined from that, and assimilating all that and connecting dots and looking for common ground and all that, you know, Sufism and so many, I can't even think of them right now, but the common ground being that there is, I don't personally believe there is a being, but there are energies and forces, and that the human intellect cannot grasp, that work and move behind everything. And for me, that was awesome to start getting a handle on that. It's like, oh, you know, certainly the God, I was always struggling with the God that I was told was God. It's like, oh, that's not it. That can't be right. for me, and you know, where I was coming from. And so that was very empowering for me. And one day, again, I'm on this very conscious, intentional journey of self-discovery, discovering things about the world around me, and so forth. One day, I'm a very high energy kind of person and wasn't paying attention, and I stubbed the heck out of my toe. And I was so in that moment when it happened that I just said no. And we're talking about broken toe sticking out. And I had broken my toe before, and it was very painful. But I was able to, and I could feel it happening, James. I intercepted, after I sort of broke down the experience retrospectively. It's like, well, how did that happen? How did that work? I basically intercepted the pain signal between the toe and the brain. And it happened because I was that present minded and focused when it happened. So, of course, that opened a whole other door for me in terms of self-exploration and getting even deeper into, you know, some of the maybe hidden truths, more hidden truths that we didn't really know about, and coming to figure things out and come to this place of direct knowing. And the more I studied, whether it was science or religion or spirituality or whatever, history, psychology, the more I discovered, and again, I got a lot of good information and good deep background in so many areas that have served me so well. But zooming out, I started seeing, it's like, but all of these are just pieces. None of them are paths in and of themselves. There was always this sort of and I started really noticing it when I was, I would say, a teenager, and it just got stronger and stronger. But, you know, from the movie The Matrix, this splinter in my mind. It's like, you're moving, you're learning, you're making progress, but there's something else. There's something else that you're just not seeing yet. And so just, you know, I kept plugging away. Well, this discovering that not just me, but it's like, if I can do this, if I can intercept pain, then why can't other people? You know, it's like, well, this is something that probably a lot of other people could figure out, you know, if they knew exactly kind of how the process unfolded. So that was deeply exciting for me. And I started experimenting and looking at things. And no, I didn't go around. I didn't experiment by keeping, you know, I didn't go around knocking my toe against things. But for example, if I did bump into something, I would try to duplicate that same first experience, and began being able to do that on an almost 100% basis. And it always had to do with being present moment aware. And so that was one of the first practices that I really started working with and using in my own self-discovery, you know, how I work and, you know, what are all my parts and, you know, how does this all fit together and what does it mean in the bigger scheme of things in life in general and that sort of thing. So the journey, the scope of the journey kept expanding as I kept moving along. And I guess I've been continuing that work, as I just described it, you know, not just experimenting with energetic capacities and mind and consciousness capacities, but studying, researching, and so forth. And a couple of years into that, and there's a lot of other pieces involved, but I'm trying not to go on forever. But the next big milestone was a couple of years later, and again, it was the direct result of following this path, this journey of self-discovery, seeking intentionally to know more, you know, higher and higher order knowledge and understanding of myself and the world. It was a direct result of that, that I had basically a life-changing event wherein in one moment, it wasn't like I was flooded with thoughts or a bolt of energy of any sort. It wasn't like that. It was just, I felt full. I was filled. And I get emotional talking about it. Forgive me. I haven't talked about it.
It's quite all right. Please continue. You're doing a great job.
I haven't talked about it in so long, and for and not to many people at all. So I was just filled with something that's beyond words. And this physical experience, I felt like I was literally, it was, I would call it sort of, now that, you know, with my understandings, I would refer to it as sort of an aware state of nirvana. Nirvana typically is, for those of you who have, you know, done any studies about that, it's sort of a, you're not connected or engaged, I should say. You're not engaged with this world while you're experiencing that. Well, I was, but that's the closest description I can think of as far as terminology, referential terminology. So, but my whole body was literally humming. That's the best way. Sort of this low-grade energetic hum that I felt in every cell, every body part. Extremely pleasant. It just, like I said, almost beyond words, but that's the best I can do using words. And what triggered it was a funny thing. After I had read Zukav's Dancing Woolly Masters, I thought I had learned about his other book, and both of these had been published years before I stumbled into them. I was reading Seed of the Soul, and it was the part about self-responsibility. And I don't recall his exact words, because I don't adhere to any one person's teachings. I just, what I need to know just basically latches into me, and I just keep moving through stuff. So I don't always have a real good exact memory. Certain things I do, but not all. But it was with regards to the fact that we are each co-creators, and we are responsible for everything that we emit. Now, that's those are my terminologies, but and my understanding too is that we are all energy. Everything that is a form of energy, an expression of energy. And for some reason, that just clicked in that moment, and excuse me, in weeks to come, whatever was being impressed into me started unfolding in terms of thought. And again, that's the best way I know how to describe it. I would just be doing something at work or around the house, and this higher order knowledge would just flow into me, and it's like, wow, where did that come from? And I started writing it down and doing my best to translate it, because I'm all about practical application. That's just who I am. I'm a very pragmatic person. And to me, what's the point of higher order knowledge if you're not going to be able to use it in day-to-day living? That's what learning was always about for me. It wasn't just learning for the sake of learning, information just for the sake of information. It's always for me been about how can I use this in my life, or to help others, or to make maybe someone else's life a little bit better, or on the job, you know, to do better work, any number of things. But anyway, and things would just start unfolding. And so what I figured out, this was a different level and type of information. And it finally came to me, even though I've always been very animated and interactive in one-on-one situations with people that I know and trust. But in terms of addressing groups or multiple people, that was brand new for me. But that's what I felt that I needed to do, that this information that was coming to me needed to be shared. And before I did that, before I ever presented any information, I wanted to first translate that into means that could be practically applied in anybody's life. You know, the day-to-day goings along. How can this be applied in day-to-day life? So that's what I started doing. But I'm going to backtrack just a minute in terms of the, quote, physical experience that I had. It was so powerful that the day after it happened, at that time, my son was a teenager, you know, hormones in sneakers, totally self-absorbed. I mean, he was a good kid, but really, you know, in his own world. But he had very strong energy, and I could always feel him coming into a room before I saw him, just that kind of energy. But he was headed out that particular morning. I was at the kitchen sink doing breakfast dishes, and he was headed out to meet some of his buddies, go play, shoot some hoops, you know. And I heard him. He was headed to the garage to go out that way. And he stopped dead in his tracks. And again, I'm kind of wondering what's going on. And I turned around, kind of looked halfway over my shoulder, but couldn't turn completely around because my hands were wet. And I heard him coming toward me, and he just reached down. By then he was already about 6'2". He's 6'4" now. And he leaned down and just gave me the biggest hug, just out of the blue. Now, he and I were very close anyway. And we'd always been, you know, very affectionate, but this was just out of the blue. And I said, well, what's that for? And he said, I don't know, Mom. He said, you feel different. And I would be out running errands. And I know in one case, I was walking, going to cross a street, and there was a bus stop at that one place. And there was a woman standing there. And she just kept looking at me and smiling, and I I was feeling it before I saw it. And I finally looked at her and I smiled back. And she said, she asked me, she said, "Can I hug you?" Excuse me. So this is how powerful this, whatever was moving through me, this energy was, that I'm and I had a doctor's appointment, and same thing at the doctor's office. After the examination, one of the nurses came in, and I knew her, but never before had she asked me if she could hug me. So, you know, it's like, this was powerful stuff. So anyway, I proceeded with these, working with groups and individuals. And it was at that point, as the group started expanding, that's when the New Agers came in onto the scene. A lot of those folks were starting to come into the groups, and there's good information in that arena as well. I had done some investigation there, but I know at some of the meetings I would just start letting things unfold through me, you know, no prior thought, and things would just start coming up and out. And they go, "Oh, you read this book or you read that book." And I would look at them with a completely blank look, because these were books I'd never heard of, people I'd never heard of. But anyway, unfortunately, I got caught up in the dark side of what I now called, and many others call, the New Cage movement. And for a number of years, probably 5 or 6 years, was sucked into that in my ignorance and naivety, because this was all new to me. And I had no frame of reference of, when I wanted to reach out to others that maybe have been experiencing these type of things, these people sort of just came to me. And I later realized again that there was some entity interference there, because several things unfolded as a result of my entanglement with that. At the time, I did not know, I did not have a name for it, but my husband and I, during that time, my time of my awakening, had come to the decision, and it was a good decision, that we were going to go our separate ways. And we'd been separated for probably better than a year. And so when I was doing these groups, I met a person, and we got involved in a relationship. But what I later came to understand was a dark side of Cupid kind of thing. It was crazy. And then there was kind of a string of those, kind of two or three in a row. Of course, there'd be gaps between relationships, because I had many other things going on, but the same kind of relationship just kind of kept showing up until I learned more about that. But anyway, the more I dug in and started learning from experiences, and it took some time, I got way off track during the course of my entanglement with the New Age people and some of those twisted teachings and outright deceptions around, you know, principles and conditions that are true about our reality. And now it's really infested. That whole scene is terribly infested. Whether by wittingly infested people or unwitting, but that whole scene is really, you know, an alligator pit now. And I feel sorry. I feel sorry for those that are getting caught up in it now, because it will be even harder to get out of it. Because it took quite a bit of work for me to figure out that was really part of the one of the primary reasons I'd gotten so far off track on my own journey. And then, of course, negative, regressive energies and emotions started coming back more to the surface in myself. Other things in my life started falling in the tank because I am off my track. And, you know, basically it's like I was looking at my life and it's like, my God, things are worse than they've ever been. And so in this case, as is what happens with so many people, that's when through personal suffering, and I mean big time, again, loss of employment, loss of home. I lost my two dear friends, two cats that I had had for 14 years within a month of each other. Boom, boom, boom. And it's like, okay, personal suffering took me to the next phase of my journey, which was the 3D stuff. The inner workings of the 3D agenda to manipulate and control humanity, the 3D end of it, which of course then in turn ultimately led me back up into the higher density realms. I kind of came full circle, but that was really a tough, tough time. I spent every spare moment, we're talking sometimes 18 and 20 hour days of immersing myself once I was on this journey. And it began, James, with I was just so exhausted. I'd been working so hard to get employment. I would be on these websites and you know, various social media sites. You know, my family was giving me all sorts of grief, saying that I wasn't really trying to get work, my wonderful messed up family. And, you know, attacks from every angle. And one day I was just so exhausted, I sat down in a chair and closed my eyes, literally not knowing where to go, where to turn from there. And I had this, I was awake, but kind of in that alpha state. And I had this in this vision. And it was this huge, no end in sight, black ocean. And again, this still brings a little bit of emotion, but, and it was full. It was filled with an incalculable number of people screaming for help. They were drowning. Help me, save me, help me. And it was just, but I was awake. And I'm still trying to process this whole thing. And the very next day, again, I'm looking for work. I'm using various social media method and so forth. And somebody, I believe it was a LinkedIn connection. Somebody said, what's your favorite book? You think the most important book that you ever read? And somebody posted, and I apologize, his name just went out of my head. John, it starts with a G. The fine gentleman who wrote the book about the underground history of American education. And that book, that there was an excerpt from that book that someone had emailed me a couple of years before. And at the time, I didn't know it was an excerpt from that book. But an email attachment that was an excerpt that addressed, I believe it was Woodrow Wilson's speech about the American education system and how we're not here to groom artists and great thinkers. We're here to groom workers. And that's my translation, of course. That is not, those are not the words he used. But it was just breathtaking to me. I was so taken aback. And I asked my friend, it's like, where'd you get this? I want to know where this came from. What book? But when I got the, saw the book title, something in me told me, it's like, I have to find that book. And I will try to remember it before the end of this segment of the interview. And if not, I'll get it before the next segment. But anyway, this this book set me on the path of seeing the corruption, the manipulation, the puppet strings, because this one book, James, and it's really important. That's why I stress it. It discusses not only American education, but it leads to, it's so well documented, and it leads to so many other fantastic resources, other books that get into how the so-called health system, the medical system in this country came into be. I believe that book's called Rockefeller Medicine. That's another classic about how our so-called health system came into being and why it's so screwed up and what was really going on. But that journey, and that, again, that was a very extremely painful part of my process and learning, is because it was so widespread, seemingly so complete, that every key institution in society is to learn that they're all infested. They're all, you know, from the political system, the education system, the healthcare system, science. It is not science. Mainstream science is scientism. It's not true science. Universities, you know, the academic control, and just on and on and on. It was very overwhelming, and I know it is for a lot of others too, particularly empaths and sensitives. I would just have to get up from my book, put it down, or push away from the computer to catch my breath. But I did this for about a year. I probably read between 200 and 300 books. I can't tell you how many videos I watched. I mean, I just immersed myself fully so that I would know. And it's very challenging for a lot of people who began that part of the journey to not get stuck in rabbit holes. It is important to investigate. You know, the way to do is to view yourself as a generalist and to not see yourself as having to be an expert in any one area, except those that really draw you. Perhaps you have some, you feel some connection to a particular aspect of this journey, then yes, follow that. But people get caught in rabbit holes and they never get past learning about the 3T, the 3D control system. They never get to the next layer, the interdimensional, you know, where other beings and entities. Well, to me, that was easier because I had experiences myself. Now, no, I am not, to my knowledge, I have no memories of being an abductee, but I have seen multiple craft, multiple UFOs, and had multiple other types of entity experiences. And it wasn't until retrospectively that I was able to connect kind of a flurry of events around my big consciousness expanding experience. It was during those few years that various incidents just started unfolding one after the other. One evening, for example, my husband at the time and I were sitting out on the deck behind our house. We had another deck to the side, but we liked the back one because it was larger and we had a good view of the sky. And excuse me. And I think we'd had guests that night, so it was late. But we often did that. We'd sit out, you know, like 1 or 2 in the morning when it was quiet and peaceful. and we're just sitting there, and this. Two different occasions are very similar. So the setting is about the same. On one occasion, and now mind you, my husband at the time, this is, his major was military history and computer technology and he was well-versed in military and all sorts of aircraft. I mean, this is a guy whose tested IQ was like some crazy number, like 182, just off the charts, just walking source. I mean, and of course, that's one of the reasons the relationship ended up not working out, because he was lacking in other areas, particularly emotional IQ. But anyway, we're sitting out, clear night. There's just a few clouds, high level clouds, but relatively clear. And we see an object, quite a distance. And of course, our first thought is that it's some sort of traditional aircraft, because we see blinking lights, red in particular. But as it moved closer, it seemed to sort of stall out. And the closer it got, it was on a flat trajectory, as opposed to either an inclining or declining, as though a plane would be landing. But so that's not that out of ordinary either, but sort of a static trajectory moving toward us. And so we're still just assuming, we're not talking about it, but it's caught both of our eyes. And the closer it gets, there's multiple lights involved, multiple colors of lights, I should say. And the next thing we know, it darts straight up and stops. Then it drops, and we're talking in a snap, and then drops back down basically to the position it had been in prior to jumping right up. And from that position, it started moving in circles. And then it even took like a spiral trajectory. And this is all happening fast. This isn't like I've been to many air shows, and I've seen a lot of aeronautics displays and, some fancy footwork in the sky. And this, whatever it was moving so quickly. And so, and then it just started moving just sort of erratically, dart here, dart there, jump around. And then our mouths are open, and then it's gone. And the second major experience involving an aircraft was another night, similar circumstances. It's quiet. We're not even really talking. We're just sitting and taking in the quiet. And I looked up. Again, weather conditions very similar in terms of cloud coverage and so forth. And I just happened to look up and see some clouds that I hadn't noticed before. And they're sort of kind of roiling, like fast motion movement. And the next thing I know, this massive, and this was close to, it was close and it was huge. Dead silent, no noise, in the shape of the leading edge, at least, was triangular, or I should say, what's the word, trapezoid, pointed, and then the sides going down like a triangle, like a pyramid, with three lights, and they weren't colored lights, they were just sort of a whitish, yellowish glow. Three linear, a linear row of lights on both sides. And I'm just, you can imagine, just dumbfounded. And without taking my eyes off of this, words finally came. And I said to him, I said, "Are you seeing this?" And all he could say was, "Yep." And so this thing is moving over us. I never got to see the, quote, tail end of it, because the clouds went back into place and concealed it. But just cruising speed, I mean really slow cruising speed, no lights or beams or anything like that were shooting out of it, just this cruising vehicle. And it may well have been some sort of military craft, but there was absolutely no sound. And this sucker was close. And I asked my husband about it. I went ahead and made a couple of notes that night and asked if he would too. We wanted to compare notes the next day. We wanted to compare what we had seen. And we had seen the same thing. But after that, he refused to talk because I asked him, I said, do you know of anything? What could that be? Could that be some of the latest technology? And he goes, nothing I've ever heard of, nothing I've ever seen. And he refused to ever talk about it again. So, and at that point, it's like, well, who am I going to tell? So, and also around that big personal event of mine, the body, full body event, it was during that time that I had another encounter with a incredibly powerful regressive, once again, this black on black amorphous mist. And this time it was much closer, but I need to backtrack a minute. It was during this time that I got basically an unexplainable, the doctor couldn't explain it, I just showed up with pneumonia, nasty case of pneumonia, and I was recovering from that. And also, this is while I'm doing those group meetings in my home with some of these other people who I now know were portals for other entities. And all of this is sort of happening, like it's a compressed time. A lot of stuff happened, but I was very vulnerable, very ill, and I was sleeping, not in the bedroom, because I didn't want to keep my husband up all night, coughing and choking and so forth. And I had begged the doctors to not hospitalize me. And the doctor finally agreed. He said, as long as you don't let anybody besides your immediate family into your home, that's the only way he would agree to it. So that's the only reason I was home and not in the hospital. And he said, if I got any worse, he was going to insist that I did go to the hospital. So anyway, I'm very vulnerable at this point, physically ill, and sleeping on a Recamier. You know, it's one of those kind of a half sofa. It's the length of a sofa, but it has a back, you know, a stiff back. And I would sleep basically, or try to sleep, propped up so that I wouldn't get so overly congested from the pneumonia. And so once again, I'm wide awake, but my eyes are closed and I just suddenly feel almost like I can't breathe. The atmosphere is just so intensely oppressive. Again, it was frightening. And I opened my eyes and that's when I saw this huge covering, I would say probably half of the ceiling of the sunroom, black and, like I said, sort of, you know, moving and amorphous and in shape. And again, in that moment, I flashed back to the prior experiences I had had. And I knew, in particular, that very first one, it came to me how I made that thing go away. It's by facing it and standing up to it. Except this time I just said, get out of here. I do not feel like this. I am so not in the mood for you. Just go. And it did. It was like it just disintegrated before my eyes because I was so intensely centered and focused, so sincere in that. It wasn't just emotions. It was from a different place, as I said. It was so clear and unwavering that I realize now that that entity had no choice but to go. There was no energetic compatibility. So it was gone. But string of circumstances like that, in retrospect, started making a whole lot more sense, which dove me further into basically what I do now, which is realizing the deep realization that mastery of self is the direction that I needed to go. And that's basically what I had been doing when I was working with people in groups. And I had been doing this on the side a number of years by the time I started getting into the 3D control system. But just on the side, because I was trying, you know, making ends meet, you know, just a regular Joe trying to get by. And but I realized that this was the specific focus of what I was meant to be doing. That the abilities that I had awakened to, certain talents and skills that I had acquired throughout the course of my non-self-mastery, my non-consulting work, you know, things like personnel development, program development, training people. I had also studied and become and spent years as a business and career and personal coach, being very good at picking up on people's blind spots and being able to guide them through, you know, help them get back on track. So it's like all of a sudden, all of this stuff started coming together with the realization that the work that I'm here to do is self-mastery. And beyond that, you know, it's like, because it's never just about me. That's not the way I'm built. How I can bring this to other people and help showing them how, without having to go through so much of the grief and the learning that I had to get to this place. So that's basically it. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it, James.
Well, it's a fascinating story, and the key statement there is self-mastery, because there's too many people, and I'm going to elaborate on this a little bit more at the start of the second segment, is that there are too many people in our field, Marianne, who want to be leaders, they want to be gurus, they want to have a huge mass following, but they haven't started with the first circle. They haven't started with themselves. They haven't learned self-discipline. They haven't become accountable to themselves. One has to be accountable to oneself before they can be accountable to other people. I mean, that's such a basic concept, which seems to elude a lot of people. And, you know, applied to all walks of life, all pursuits, but also from the spiritual warrior perspective. Now, we see in the physical plane how self-mastery has been applied. I mean, I look back in military history, I think of the Bushido Code of the samurai, I think of the discipline of the Roman legions. It's a different form of self-mastery applied to, you know, the agendas and the empires and the regimes that they were fronting for, all these different soldiers of different types of warriors over time. But the bottom line, in order for them to do what they felt they needed to do, what their destiny was, they had to have self-mastery. The Eastern mystics talked about this a lot, this the importance of self-mastery. So, you know, we're just getting started here, folks. This has been a fascinating first segment with Marianne Fisher. Could you tell our listeners once again, Marianne, what your website is?
It is the Restoration Activation Project. The actual website is restoration-activationproject.com.
And we'll have, again, Marianne's information on our website and our dedicated YouTube channel. To our dear listeners out there, if you like what we do, if you believe in what we do, please go to thecosmicswitchboard.com, sign up and become a member, and we'll see you at the top of the next segment.